to you for getting benefits, spiritual benefit by discussing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam and for self-purification. So if all of you would please bless me that whatever we discuss would be beneficial for everyone, myself in the first place. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Anyway, it's prose, so there is no responsive chanting, so I'll just read the verse, text 30. Athachaya svihava atma sambhavena svayamadhamo janmatapo vidyachara Varnashramavato Pariyasona Bahu Manita Samritaka Eva Mritva Ksharaka Dame Nirayeva Kshira Nipatito Durantaya Tanta Yashnute Hare Krishna. Anyway, we'll try to repeat synonyms. Atha, furthermore. Cha, also. Yaha, anyone who. Tu, but. Iha, in this life. Va, or. Atma sambhavanena, by false prestige. Svayam, himself. Adamaha, very degraded. Janma, good birth. Tapaha, austerities. Vidya, knowledge. Achara, good behavior. Varnashramavata, in terms of strictly following the principles of varnashram. Pariyasa, one who is more honorable. Na, not. Bahu, much. Manyata, respects. Saha, he. Mrikataha, a dead body. Eva, only. Mritva, after dying. Kshara-kadame, named Kshara-kadam. Niraya, in the hell. Avakshira, with his head downward. Nipatitaha, thrown. Durantayatanta, severe painful conditions. He, indeed, Ashnote suffers. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, I am great, and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man, even in this lifetime. And after that, he is thrown headfirst into the hell known as Kshara-kadam. There he must greatly suffer great tribulation at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. Purport. One should not become falsely proud. One must be respectful toward a person more elevated than he by birth, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order. If one does not show respect to such highly elevated persons, but indulges in false pride, he receives punishment in Kshārakadham. So one more hellish planet is described, called Kshārakadham. Apparently much worse than Notre Dame. Probably in comparison to these hellish planets, any miserable condition on the earth would seem like a Disneyland. So it's pretty heavy description. And I remember His Holiness Gopal Krishna Maharaj some time back was recollecting on how the fifth canto just came out, was printed hot of the press, and so the devotees were very enthusiastic to read it. As we know, all the cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam were produced gradually, one by one, and so you can just imagine the excitement of the devotees who were getting new Prabhupada's book, and they were reading it. And of course they were very enthusiastic, because these kind of descriptions, such elaborate explanation of what's happening in the universe, not just that there is heaven and hell, but what's happening in heaven, what's happening in hell, what is the structure of the universe, etc. It's not really available anywhere. Of course, other scriptures, they do mention heaven and hell, but there are no details. Like for hell, it just says the lake of fire, that's it. But here, Shukadeva Goswami goes into great details. He says, some people say there are 21 hells, and some people say there are 28 types of hells. And then he describes actually 28 types of hells. So he gives elaborate descriptions. And devotees were quite excited. New Prabhupada's books and so much spiritual knowledge. And of course, when you excited yourself, you make other people excited. And so devotees were very enthusiastically distributing fifth canto. They didn't care that it's just in the middle of the Bhagavatam. They would just take that book, fifth canto, you know, last part, also not even from the beginning, and they would just go out in the airport somewhere, whether it was US or Canada, I'm not exactly sure, and they were enthusiastically distributing these books to the people, and people were enthusiastically purchasing these books because they became also curious what's going on in the universe. And this is incidentally the final chapter in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is how fifth canto ends, with the hellish planets, with the description of the hellish planets. And so people became very curious, what's happening in hell? And so they would open this chapter, and then Maharaj would say that people would become so shocked by these descriptions that they would, you know, forget the books and even forget pieces of their luggage in the airport and board the plane, or leave the airport forgetting their luggage, because they were in such a shock. And you can easily imagine, I mean, those of you who've been listening to those descriptions for a few days, there are apparently very minor sins, like killing mosquito or something, for which people go to hell for almost forever. So it is shocking. Of course, our attitude is, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's not for us, right? It's for those whom some devotees lovingly and with great compassion call dirty karmis, right? I guess these kind of definitions are meant to encourage people to, you know, take interest and join the movement. Oh, someone calls me dirty Karmi. This must be really nice people. Let me find out more about them, right? Of course. Luckily, nowadays, these tendencies decrease because this tendency is sprouting exactly from what this verse is talking about, false pride. But still, there is this very strong tendency. You know, we're not too shocked by these descriptions. You know, like we listening about the hellish planets, and there is not much emotional impact, right? Like we come, what's on Bhagavatam? What part of Bhagavatam we are on? On hellish planets. Oh, okay, we're on hellish planets. And what's on breakfast? What do we have for breakfast? Okay, khichdi. Okay, that's good. That's it, right? What's on the menu? That's all we want to know. And we don't care. Because we believe it's not for us, right? And in one sense it is true. Because the next canto, canto 6, starts with the glorification of the Holy Name and the power of the Holy Name and how Holy Name can deliver even the greatest sinners. And of course, Maharaj Parikshit, being compassionate Vaishnava, and this is how devotee is supposed to respond to this part of Srimad Bhagavatam. People are suffering so greatly, and can anything be done to help them, to deliver them from these horrible conditions? And so this is what Maharaj Parikshit is asking. And of course, Shukadeva Goswami says that the greatest deliverer which helps one to overcome all types of sins is the Holy Name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And since we are chanting the Holy Name, so legitimately we expect that, you know, we are above and beyond what this chapter is describing. We are exempt from these problems. And it is true, but if we want to understand the whole picture, it's important to study not just one part of Srimad Bhagavatam, but the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And what it describes, and also Mahabharata, for example. Interesting example is the Maharaj Yudhishthir. He had to see hellish planets. And why? Because he just hesitated to do what Krishna said, right? Just hesitated to follow Krishna's instruction to say that Ashwatthama is dead. And just for that hesitation, he had to go and see hell. So devotees, they don't go to hell, which is true, but there are enough miserable conditions available even on earth. And the very relevant part of Srimad Bhagavatam, very relevant description is there in the 10th canto, the story of Nalakuvar and Manigrih. And it is very important for us to understand the relevance of Srimad Bhagavatam to our own lives. And so, if we look at Nalakuvar and Manigrih, they were actually devotees because their father was very exalted devotee, demigod. Demigods are devotees, and they were his children. So automatically they were born in devotee family, and so they were considering that, you know, their father is such a great devotee, and their father's friend. He's the greatest of all the Vaishnavas in the material world, Lord Shiva, right? And so on the basis of those facts, they thought that they are completely exempt from having to face any problems in their lives, right? And as the description goes, they were drinking and enjoying with having the ladies being completely naked. And then Narad Muni comes along, and as we know, they failed to show him proper respect, being too proud of their position and wealth and beauty. So it was not even false pride, it was real pride. They had all these things, but they were proud. And so then, as a result, Narad Muni cursed them to become trees. And the important part in that description that, okay, if they would just turn into trees, who cares, right? The tree cannot feel anything, cannot think, you know, it's just very dull condition. But Bhagavatam mentions specifically that even though they turned into the trees, but they retained their human consciousness, right? And they were there standing as those trees, Yamalajuna trees, for how long? 36,000 years. You can just, you know, place yourself into the Nalakovar and Manigrip shoes, right? Instead of hands, you have branches. Instead of legs, you have roots. Instead of head, you just have, you know, leaves. And you have to stand there and you cannot move. I mean, if I will, you know, risk to extend this Bhagavatam class for like 5 or 10 minutes, already devotees will feel restless. You know, why do we have to sit longer than normal, right? Because an hour of sitting in one position, being in one position, is already austere enough, right? Now imagine 36,000 years not being able to move or do anything, right? Of course, they had plenty of time to stand and think about their behavior. And of course, when they finally got delivered, of course, the prize, you know, the blessing which Narad Muni gave them on the top, that they will be delivered by the Supreme Lord, personally, it was all worth it. But just imagine what kind of misery they had to go through just because of their mistake caused by pride. And so we can understand that, yes, we may not go to hell if we act in a way which is described here, but we may end up going through hellish, miserable condition in this lifetime or in the next lifetime or whatever, you know, it may be quite severe. So that's why it is said in Padma Puramana, namo namno yasya balat hi papabuddhi, that we cannot chant the holy name and commit sinful activities at the same time, hoping that the effect of the holy name will nullify our sinful activities. You know, because Krishna is not a fool, so he knows what we are doing exactly and what our intentions are. He can read our minds. I mean, it's not a big surprise. In Vrindavan, so many people can read our minds. What to speak of Krishna? Even the devotee who is taking care of the shoes. I came for the first day I came, and I left my shoes next to the shoe room. And these were the shoes I never came to Vrindavan with. And so when I was at the program, he took the shoes and placed them in the room. And when I came out, he gave me the shoes, exact shoes. How he does that, I have no idea. And I never even saw those shoes. You know, you could say that, okay, he followed, you know, my glance. No, he didn't. I didn't even see those shoes. He just pulled them out. It's completely amazing. And if you're noticing, say, if you come out and you have to go somewhere, you have to hire a rickshaw, immediately all rickshaw wallahs run towards you, offering their services. But if you don't have this intention, they just don't come. So it's amazing. Vrindavan is an amazing place, full of so many amazing personalities. What to speak of the chief of all the personalities, Krishna, here, who is Krishna. So definitely Krishna can read our minds and understand all our intentions. And so if we act in the wrong way, and if we hope that, you know, the result of the chanting of the holy name will nullify the wrong activities we are performing, Krishna might as well let us down on our expectation. He might as well allow the situation which will help us to become free from this wrong kind of mentality for our benefit. So that's why it is recommended that we should learn by hearing, not rather than just by experiencing, because, you know, when we go through the experience, when we already in this situation, it might be too late to lament, right? We can well imagine that Nala Kuvar and Manigriv were lamenting this situation, but it didn't change anything. And so, better. That's why it says that prevention is better than cure. Better not to allow the disease to enter our mind and senses, so that we wouldn't have to go through very painful cure process. And so the specific anartha which is described here is actually very relevant. Very relevant, especially for us, for devotees, you know, like for myself, I think it's Krishna's arrangement, because this verse is describing me exactly, a low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking I'm great. False pride. And of course, specifically it refers to those who didn't come from, you know, pious background. Like, luckily we have more and more devotees nowadays who come from extremely pious background. And it's interesting, you know, over the quarter a century, I'm associating with devotees and practicing Krishna consciousness, I'm noticing very amazing phenomena that those people, meaning devotees, who have every single reason on earth to be proud, they behave themselves in a very humble and meek way. And those who hardly have any reasons to be proud, they behave in a very proud way. It's quite amazing. That's why of course the biggest example in my mind is Chaupati devotees. Amazingly qualified and amazingly humble at the same time, which is mind-blowing. And there are many other personalities like that. I remember one time I was taking a treatment in Udupi, doing Panchakarma, and my doctor, he was an associate professor in Ayurveda. He was only 27 at the time, and he spoke Sanskrit better than English, and his English was absolutely perfect. He knew a number of languages, and he was he perfectly knew yoga, astrology, what to speak Ayurveda. He could quote like dozens of verses from Charaka Samhita, just explaining to other doctors what to do, what not to do, just backing up with Shastra, etc. And he was expert in astrology. Later I found that he comes from the family, his father is world-renowned Sanskrit scholar who traveled around and taught Sanskrit in so many different universities. And his grandfather was famous astrologer whose textbooks are still used even today in India to study astrology. And so he comes from this kind of aristocratic Brahmana Vaishnava, Ramanuja line, family. And then here I come to take a treatment, and I have tilak and this kind of dress, and he kind of looks at me puzzled and he said, how come that you are wearing Vaishnava tilak and you have this dress? And so I'm explaining to him that it's by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada that people like myself got the opportunity to practice Krishna Bhakti. And then I'm telling him a few things about Srila Prabhupada. And he says, really? All over the world, people are taking to Bhakti Yoga? That's unbelievable. And I'm saying, yes, because Prabhupada distributed, you know, wrote so many books and they are published in so many languages and so many people take up to the devotional service. And he said, I would love to read his books. And I said, no problem. And they have local temple in Udupi, so I got, I purchased Bhagavad Gita and a few other small books. And I brought him as a gift. It's always good to have friendly relations with your doctor, just in case. Give him some gift. So I'm bringing him these books and I'm telling, please take these books, this is a gift for you. And he takes those books, especially Bhagavad Gita, with such a great respect and touches them to his head and with great care opening, and he started reading Bhagavad Gita. And he says, I cannot thank you enough. So please tell me, how much do I owe you for the books? I'm saying, you know, it's just a gift. I'm not expecting anything. Please take it as a gift. And he says, no, 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 I want to pay. I'm saying, no, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. These books are not expensive. And then he looks at me with tears in his eyes. And he says, you don't understand. In our tradition, if someone gives you Shastra, that person is Guru, and Guru has to be given Dakshin. I am shocked. I'm saying, what, you know, forget it. I'm not a Guru. I'm just an ordinary man. I'm just trying to practice Krishna consciousness to the best of my ability, and I have no qualifications. He said, no, no, no. I have to give you Dakshin. I'm saying, no. He says, no, I should give, etc. So we argue back and forth, and then he realizes that under no circumstances I'll take any remuneration from him. And he says, anyway, now I owe you a favor, so I'll have to see what I can do to return it. And then, you know, I'm kind of forgetting all this exchange after a few days, and then a few days are passing, and the treatment, which was not a cheap treatment, you know, it was a government clinic and they have all the professional equipment and services, etc. And I'm expecting to pay a bill of around maybe 10 or 15,000 rupees or so. And then I'm coming to the cash desk and the cashier tells me, your bill is covered, it's paid. And I'm asking, who paid the bill? And I came with few friends, I thought maybe they did. And the cashier said, your doctor paid the whole amount. And I'm coming to him, I'm saying, what have you done? That, you know, the kind of money the treatment cost is no comparison to what I spend on the books. And he said, we're not on the market bargaining, right? You did me a favor, I did you a favor, etc. And so, then he invited us home, he, you know, his mother cooked wonderful lunch, and I had the foolishness to ask if this is prasadam. And the mother became so offended. She said, in our house, for many generations, everything we cook and eat is only prasadam and nothing else. It's all offered to our deity, etc. And we tried to reciprocate with them. You know, one of my friends tried to kind of give them some donation. They started panicking, and then we ended up with gifts from them, and they have taken nothing from us. And so these kind of people still existing. So that's why Srila Prabhupada says, you know, Vedic culture is like an elephant. Whether elephant is dead or alive, he still has, you know, very high value. Because even if the elephant is dead, the ivory is still very costly. And so in the same way, even though we see that Vedic culture is greatly damaged, unfortunately, by the influence of Kali Yuga, but still there are amazing, mind-blowing personalities here, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, who have very, very high level of culture. And this kind of association is actually what we should be seeking for when we are in India, and especially in the holy places. Because it says, Mahatsavam Dvaram, Ahurvimurte Tamodvaram, Yoshita Sanghi Sangam. Rishabhdev, in the very beginning of the fifth canto, explains that serving great Vaishnavas is opening the door of liberation, but associating with materialistic people is opening the gateways to hell. And so this is very important, and of course, by associating and especially by serving such great personalities, and of course for us there is no difficulty, we have the best of all Brajabasis and the most qualified person. We can not only associate but serve to our heart content. And who is that? Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is the exalted resident of Sri Vrindavan Dham, who comes from the most qualified aristocratic Vaishnava background. And so, for us it is very easy. The more we serve Srila Prabhupada by following his instructions, and the more we associate with him by reading his books, and Srila Prabhupada was saying that the best of me is in my books. So if you want to really know me, if you want to really associate with me, please read my books. And then of course he says, my only complaint is that my disciples or my followers, they think that these books are to sell to other people and not to read. But he specifically said that he sacrificed so much to give us his books so that we read them in the first place. And if we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we can find many valuable instructions from great personalities which would serve as an antidote for this particular problem described in these words, the problem of false pride and failure to show proper respect to others. And this antidote is described in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, where in Narada Muni is giving instructions to Dhruva Maharaj. And one of the instructions he gives him is very amazing. This is 4.8.34, if you want to take a note, amazing verse. Gunadikan mudam lipset, anuprasham gunadamat, maitrim samana andichen, natapayat abhibhuyate. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate towards him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world, or to speak of hellish miseries, any miseries. One becomes completely immune to all miseries. And Srila Prabhupada explains very important points in the purport as well. He says, generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. Envy. That's the original, we can say, original sin. The reason we are staying in this world. When we find someone less qualified, we deride him. And when we find someone equal, we become very proud of our activities. These are the causes of all material tribulations. The great sage Narada therefore advised that a devotee should act perfectly. Instead of being envious of a more qualified man, one should be jolly to receive him. Instead of being oppressive to a less qualified man, one should be compassionate towards him, just to raise him to the proper standard. And when one meets an equal, instead of being proud of one's own activities, before him, one should treat him as a friend. One should also have compassion for the people in general who are suffering due to forgetfulness of Krishna. These important functions will make one happy within this material world. So that's a perfect instruction, and of course it takes a lot of purification and blessings to develop this kind of mentality, especially for those like myself who are not fortunate enough to be born in a perfect family and have all the perfect qualifications. So I need all the blessings from all the devotees. I just wanted to use this opportunity to ask you to please bless me so that I would develop a proper conduct and never fall victim of very dangerous, and this very dangerous anartha, pride, because pride leads to fall, unfortunately. And something fell. And of course, this is what we don't want. We don't want to fall in these horrible conditions. That's why we don't want to commit the mistakes. And I think this is very important topic, and so if any devotees have a further insight into it, any comments or questions, you're welcome to share. We still have a few more minutes left. Of course, I understand that all the devotees here are extremely humble, and you never had any problems with this particular anartha. But if anyone wants to say something, we have a microphone. Alright, so if you have a question, okay.
Hi Krishna. So about discrimination, you said that the devotee always feels lower than the middle. So who is it, or who is
So if devotee is meant to feel lower than anyone else, how he can perceive someone as junior or equal to him? That's a good question. Of course, when we speak of the devotee on the topmost level, Paramahamsa or Uttamadhikari, this is how he feels. That there is no one more fallen than me. There is no one more unqualified than me. And the most amazing example we see in Srimati Radharani, that Srimati Radharani, as we all know, is the most qualified devotee of Krishna of all times and places. Because sometimes people are asking, how is it, if Srimati Radharani is the topmost devotee, why Lord Shiva is presented as Vaishnava Navyata Shambhu, the best of the Vaishnavas? There is no contradiction, because in this material world there is no greater Vaishnava than Shiva, Lord Shiva. But if we take the whole picture, if we take both material and spiritual world, in that realm there is no greater personality in devotional service than Srimati Radharani. Because she doesn't belong to this material world. She has nothing to do with this material world. And so, we know, Srila Prabhupada was saying that how amazingly humble Srimati Radharani is, despite of being the topmost devotee of Krishna. When she brings someone to Krishna and introduces new person to Krishna, she says, Krishna, please accept that devotee. He is more qualified, or she, whatever the case. She is more, or yeah, whatever. This devotee is more qualified than me. And Krishna is, you know, in such a state of shock after this statement that he just says, okay, no problem. So, because, you know, it's an unbelievable statement, but this is how Srimati Radharani is, because she is the topmost Vaishnava. So her level of humility is also topmost. But when we speak of the devotees who are on the beginner's level, Kanishtha Adhikari and Madhyama Adhikari, up to the level of Madhyama Adhikari, and all the way through that level, devotee is still discriminating. Okay, that these people are devotees, and I should make friends with them. These people are innocent, so I should show compassion towards them. This is the Supreme Lord and His representatives, pure Vaishnavas, so I should serve them. And of course, envious people who have bad qualities, demonic qualities, I should keep distance from them. So, in this way, devotee is discriminating until he or she is reaching the topmost level. Hare Krishna. Please, Mataji, if you can hand the microphone back.
With your permission, I would just like to clarify something, to make something clearer, that the Madhyamadhikari who rejects the envious, he does not do so out of pride or anything. It's just that he knows that if he tries to preach to the envious, they will become more envious and more offensive. And therefore, out of compassion, he rejects them and he keeps them away.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that's a very good point, that Madhyama Adhikari is not feeling negative even towards demons, but he understands that it's better to stay away from these people, not to agitate them unnecessarily, because they are not ready to accept devotional service. These people just having bad day, so better to leave them alone. Thank you. So, any other points? Okay, so we'll finish a little early. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord, remember the